You've heard AM, you've heard FM. Now, tune into DM Radio, the world's longest running show about data. Each week, host Eric Cavanaugh interviews the brightest minds in the world of information management. Want to be on a show? Send an email to info@dmradio.biz. Now, here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome back once again to the longest running show in the world about data. It's called DM Radio. Yours truly, Eric Cavanaugh here, and excited to be kicking off year 2022, our third show of the year, actually, in our what is about to be 15th year. So next month will be our 14th anniversary, starting year 15 of DM Radio. Lots has changed over the last 14 years or so, but a lot has stayed the same. And the topic for today really is all about change itself. So this concept of digital transformation, we talk about it all the time in our business. It's a bit of a trite term, but it really shouldn't be, because digital transformation is progress. Digital transformation is when companies find ways to strategically automate what were traditionally manual processes to make them dynamic processes. Now, today, with all these cloud vendors offering so much functionality, we talk all the time about the MarTech 7000. It's actually like 8,000 software as a service applications just for marketing and sales automation. That's only, what, 20, 30% of any given business? So you got all the other operations, all the other stuff. A lot of that's going cloud-based too, with a lot of different companies entering the fray. And we're all kind of moving from this on-prem environment that we talk about into a new cloud-enabled world with cloud-native apps is one way to describe them. But it's a difficult process. But I can tell you this, COVID, one positive silver lining from that whole mess is that it really forced companies to be very serious and very focused on understanding where, when, how, and why to automate which processes, at what time frame, and so forth. A couple of years ago, we had a chief data officer on the show from Novant Health who talked about how they achieved 5 years of digital transformation in 6 months after COVID struck. So, and this is a pretty big health company, so not a small thing, but it shows what you can accomplish when you know that you must accomplish it. If you know that you have to get something done, that's a good motivator to roll up your sleeves and start focusing on what to do. And that really gets down to a strategy session. I'm a big believer that every company these days should have a strategy office, and those folks should have people who love data, who love technology, and are keeping their ear to the ground to understand what's coming down the pike, what are the possibilities, because now you can outsource just about everything. You can weave together really complex workflows all in the cloud. So we're going to talk about that today with our guests. We'll hear from Michael Krigsman of CXO Talk. We have Gray Hardell of Workato, and Patrick Conti from Ops and I will join us in the second segment. Without further ado, let's bring in Michael Krigsman, CXO Talk. Michael, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Tell us a bit about your show and what you're doing, and what your thoughts are about digital transformation.
Eric, it's just great to be here, and congratulations on 15 years of DM Radio. It's so impressive.
Thank you. Time flies.
Time definitely flies, and you've done an amazing job. CXO Talk is a conversation series with business leaders. Our focus is on disruption and transformation. When we talk about digital transformation, I think there are a few key components that we really should focus on. Number one, rethinking our relationship to customers, redefining our processes, as you mentioned in the opening, redefining the technologies that we use, redefining our culture, our mindset, all around what do our customers actually want? Mm-hmm. Seems kind of obvious, but for many organizations, this requires developing a new set of thinking skills, a new set of cultural identities almost, where we have this empathy for the customer. And when we make business decisions, when we make operational decisions, we use the customer, what's best for the customer, as a core reference point. Mm. Along with that, you mentioned data. Well, data is essential. In a digital world, how do we know what's going on? Where where do we find the roadmap? How do we make decisions? Well, it's all about what's going on digitally. And of course, this then implies thinking about our business model. What do our customers want from us? How are we making money? And what do we have to do to change? All about this, about digital transformation, is change. It's about the change, the breaking down of silos, this focus on data, thinking how we invest in technology, what kind of employee experience are we trying to create? Because after all, it's now really about the customer. And that means it needs to be about our employees as well, because employees are the ones who deliver the customer experience in the end.
Right.
So digital transformation is all encompassing. It focuses on every aspect of the business. And that's why the term is trite. Yeah, the term is trite. It's easy to say, but not so hard to do.
Yeah, well, what a great way to put it. And I think you made a couple of really good points there about culture and about corporate culture. And I'll give you just some idea I had a long time ago, and I've thought about this for years and years. I think it's very interesting. In any given organization, in any given group, you wind up with this us versus them mentality settling in at some point. So you'll see it between, let's say, the customer service people and the customers who are complaining about something. You wind up with this us versus them, all those silly customers, they're always annoying us. And you really have to watch out for that. It's even internal to organizations, us, the sales guys versus the marketing people, or us, the senior executives versus the people on the teams. And that's you have to watch out for when that's happening and find some way to cut it out, because you don't want that. Like, there's no them, right? It's all us and we're in this together. So we have to figure it out. And I think the closer you are to the customer, the more you can appreciate that. But it's something that really has to go all the way up to the top of the ranks and then come right back down. What do you think, Michael?
Well, it must start with the senior leadership of an organization. And let's just look at CIOs, the chief information officers, the stewards of technology, as an example. So historically, the CIO was a very internal focused role, right? Focused on infrastructure. Today, the best CIOs that I know are focused on innovation and focused on that customer relationship. When you talk about breaking down silos, that's the antithesis of the us versus them mentality that you were describing. And that's why culture change is so important in all of this, because again, historically in organizations, you know, hey, Eric, I'm running my department and I have revenue goals and I have metrics by which I am evaluated, and I'm going to do what's best for my department. It may not be optimized for the company as a whole, but it's certainly optimized for me and my bonus.
Right. That's right. That's right. And you have to align those incentives. That's one of the more clever things that smart companies do, is they figure out. I mean, I'll just give an example of a restaurant. One of my favorite places in Austin, Texas, in South Congress, Home Slice. It's a little pizza place. And we were always amazed at how good the customer service is there. And so one day I started asking, because I'm a journalist, so I'm curious to know. And they explained to me that all of the servers split the tips. So all the tips go into a pool and then everyone splits them. What a brilliant way to encourage collaboration and cooperation and not competition. But if you can find some way to bake that into your organization, it's a great way to just kind of align the focus of people so they're moving in the right direction. What do you think?
Well, this is exactly why digital transformation needs to take place at multiple levels inside the organization.
Interesting.
At a senior level, there really does have to be this very serious commitment to using data to understand what our customers want, right? And I emphasize this role of data. Data reflects the actions of our customers, and we can build up kind of a 3D mental model of the data stream to understand what our customers care about. Having that mandate, which is we're going to do right by the customer, we then have to align our compensation systems. We have to align, as you mentioned right at the start, our processes. What are we doing? How are we executing? So that as folks across the company are making decisions, they're really thinking about what's best for the customer and what's not necessarily what's best for my department, what's best for the customer. This past week on CXO Talk, I interviewed a professor from INSEAD, one of the great business schools in Europe, and he spoke a lot about the importance of frontline workers, because it's the frontline folks who are actually talking with the customer. So how do we empower our frontline folks to do the right thing and to give us feedback? Because they're the ones that hear the stuff that customers hate.
That's right. No, that's a good point. And that's an excellent point. It's actually a good segue to bring in Gray Hardell from Workato. First, Gray, tell us a bit about yourself and what you folks are working on in the space of digital transformation. Then we'll get into Michael's point about DT really having to take place in multiple parts of the organization. But tell us a bit about yourself and Workato.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Eric. And I will also extend my congratulations to you. Thank you so much for having me back.
You bet.
At Workato, we really focus on enterprise automation. You know, we're all about making sure that the existing legacy applications can be migrated to something more modern, or if they're still core to your infrastructure, that they can be used in modern processes, and then making the most of your SaaS explosion that's probably happened throughout your business. So how do you take all of the disparate, you know, the data, the processes, and the people, and actually make them all work together to achieve better operational efficiency, generate more revenue, you know, decrease your risk, et cetera?
Yeah, that's all good stuff. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Workato. I think you guys are right up there with a couple other big vendors in this space. Celonis is one we've had on shows in the past. But, you know, to Michael's point, there are various places in the organization where this must occur in operations, in finance, in sales and marketing. These are all sort of de facto silos that we want to find some way to bring together. And the beauty is that now you can. I mean, you can stitch together any number of processes using the appropriate data, of course, to optimize a process. Maybe it's order fulfillment, for example. Maybe it's just taking orders. Whatever the case may be, you can just use technologies like Airflow, for example, just to map out, okay, this is how the process works. Throw it into production, see what happens, and you've changed your business, right?
Totally. I mean, I think about it like this. Think about the single order that you have to process at a regular company, right? You have everything from your quoting. You have to go through all of your approvals for that. And then once you actually get the deal, then you actually have to go through, make sure all the data is correct in not only your CRM, but also your ERP and any other downstream applications. You're using Slack or Teams to collaborate and ask questions to different people. Maybe you're using bots in that. And that's just to get the order to the fulfillment phase. Then you actually have to fulfill it. Now, I was talking to a customer of ours, Rapid7, and they're a fantastic technology company. And before they came to us, they're really struggling with this order to cash process, and specifically around order fulfillment, right? And provisioning licenses. You wouldn't believe on how many SaaS organizations really struggle to fulfill their licenses in a really timely way. And it's really impacting customer satisfaction because they lose that momentum that they had during the buying cycle. So Rapid7 really wanted to be able to reduce that. What they ended up doing was creating a automation that would automatically generate the license codes. Not only did that free up a ton of financial folks that could get their invoicing done so much faster and they could automate that, but it actually increased their renewal rates and their customer adoption. So it had a multifold impact, right? They increased the capacity of their workers because they weren't doing these manual tasks. They increased customer satisfaction because they were doing that, and they increased, you know, they de-risked their business because now they're much more scalable. So automation and taking these really traditional cumbersome processes and really leveraging data, people, and process to actually make it better can really have a transformative effect on an organization.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I'm glad you brought this up about how there is benefit across multiple dynamics in the organization. So yes, you're streamlining the process so the financial people don't have to spend as much time doing manual stuff, which everyone hates, right? I mean, that's one of
No one likes that.
Nobody ever will, right? That's
find me one person that actually enjoys typing in a customer name, going into another system, and then double checking it, making sure that it's, you know, capital, all capitals, ABC Corp, and not, you know, capital A, lowercase BC Corp. You know, it's just, it's a mess. And so many organizations want to take advantage of these things. They just don't really know where to start.
Right. That's a good point. And actually, I'm looking at some of the chat coming along in our live virtual studio audience here. And folks, if you want to check out one of these shows as it's broadcast, just go to dmradio.biz and you can register for our shows as they are actually recorded and broadcast. But where to start, right? There's always some pain point. Is it the customer interaction? Is it when orders are filled? Is it what you could pick your, you just throw a dart in any direction, you're going to hit something that could be automated. And the beauty is, number one, you tend to decrease errors. Right? Because human beings make mistakes, especially if you're doing a lot of boring stuff, you're going to make mistakes. So that's key. But also you make it more dynamic so you can scale, right? Scalability, like that's the buzzword of modern technology systems. If you can scale, and we'll talk to Pat Conti from OpsiDi in the next segment. If you can scale up as needed and scale back down, that's a tremendous value to the business because you don't lose business in the peak and you don't lose money in the valley. Right, Gray?
Yeah, it's totally about elasticity, right? Like you need to be elastic. And the other thing that I would think is, I always try to think about it, scale is important, but what every business person, you know, or IT person needs to think about is, what are the limits that my organization is facing? Mm-hmm. Where am I absolutely limited? Am I limited in employee capacity, in the amount of, you know, APIs that I can process, whatever it is? Where do my limits exist? And that's where you start. You need to be able to increase that threshold so that your business actually can scale. Until we recognize where limits exist, we can't scale.
Yeah, and that gets into something often referred to as constraint-based design, right? You look at the constraints that you have. Money is a constraint. People is a constraint, number of people. Now, you can hire folks, you can get more money, you can make more sales. There are ways to kind of move the boundaries, but you do have to know what those particular constraints are. In, of course, healthcare and financial services, you have regulatory constraints, which are probably the most strict. But as long as you adhere to them and have your strategy group focus on things, find opportunities. Like I said, there are so many places where you can optimize, but the key is to focus on the pain points, right? Focus on the pain point and then kind of work out from there, reverse engineer, if you will, some solution to understand how you can get there and start the ball rolling. Well, folks, don't touch that dial. We're up to our first break here in just a second. Like I said, send me an email if you want to come on air, info@dmradio.biz. That comes straight to me. Don't touch that dial. Next up, we got Patrick Conti of OpsiDi. You are listening to DM Radio.
Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, folks, back here on DM Radio. And of course, we also use the material from these shows for our new TV show, Future Proof. Check your local listings. We're in 6 markets around the country right now. And next up, we have Patrick Conti from a company called OpsiDi. I think I got that correct there. Patrick, tell us a bit about yourself and what you folks are doing to enable digital transformation.
Sure. Yeah. I'm responsible for all of the commercial parts of the company. Really, the interesting thing is what we do and what we're here for as far as customers are concerned. What OpsiDi does is we've actually built a platform using AI to autonomously and continuously tune cloud applications. This is actually a major problem for companies, both cloud native companies or born in the cloud companies, which is actually there's sort of three levels, right? There's brick and mortar, there's cloud native, then there's born in the cloud. And everybody wants to sort of move along that continuum to get towards cloud native. But the applications that customers are trying to use, or companies are trying to use to reach their customers, are getting more and more complex, even as the ability to create those applications gets faster using the DevOps model and some of the things that are going on right now in application development. So what happens is that the applications themselves is difficult to for those engineers to tune them properly. They don't know what size they need to be when they put them out into the marketplace. And, you know, it has to pass through several different groups of engineers before it gets put out into the marketplace, right? It has to, you know, there's dev guys, and then there's DevOps guys, and then there are site reliability engineers, and all of them have to touch the application before the code gets pushed out to the public. And none of them really care about the size of the application itself. Things like how much CPU to use, how much memory to use, how many copies of the application need to be in the application so it runs properly. Mm. And so what we do is we use AI, actually machine learning, to take all the key performance parameters of those applications and tune them simultaneously. And what ends up happening is the typical result is you're going to get a better performing application, usually in the form of lower latency, a little bit faster, and you're going to get a more reliable application, usually in the form of less errors. So that means less stoppages, less right. faults, and then probably most importantly to many companies, you're going to get a significantly lower cost. And it doesn't really matter what deal you cut with AWS or Azure or Google. We're going to probably save you between 30% and 70% off of that. And it's not because that's the objective. It's the result. It's the result of right-sizing the application and the settings of those performance parameters.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So I'm going to throw my theory out about how you actually operate. Let me know how close I get.
Okay.
And I'll try to explain this to the audience. So what's happening here is you have all these different applications that are running, and there are peak times and there are valley times. There are times when a bunch of people are on your website. They're all ordering stuff. Maybe they're looking, doing a lot of searches, et cetera. So different parts of your application manage the search, manage the execution, the purchasing, and so forth. And I'm guessing what Opsani does is it tracks all of these transactions and notices how quickly they execute. And so it'll check, okay, how much CPU is being used at this time, how much memory was being used at this time. And it sees across that whole spectrum of transactions and behavior and says, it seems that CPU allocation for this app should be right around here when this much traffic is right there and so forth. And so it just notices when things work very well, and it notices when things do not work very well, and it dynamically aligns to the configurations that work well. Is that about right?
Yeah, actually, that's a very good description of what we do. And I think the important thing for customers is we do this autonomously, meaning they don't have to touch it. We're always on, and we do it continuously. So even once we've allowed an application to reach its optimal state, which is the best balance of performance, reliability, and cost, once we've reached that, there's still going to be changes that happen in the application, right? And you were mentioning them, things like the traffic is going to spike or it may suddenly drop, right? So those are changes to condition of the application. Other things are what happens in the modern era, which is you're going to push new code very quickly right through that conveyor belt of DevOps. And so those are all three things that are going to change the application performance characteristics, and you want to keep it steady. So what we do is we see the changes that are coming in, and we run these experiments at machine speed to try to find that optimal balance of those characteristics that I mentioned before. So yeah, we are always looking, and we're always measuring and adjusting, Eric.
That's fantastic. And it's really interesting. And so you actually deploy in the environment, right? Someone who buys your service will actually deploy an instance of Opsani in their AWS instance or in their Google Cloud platform or whatever. Is that correct?
Almost. They deploy an agent. It's actually a container, a very small open source container that we call Servo, and they deploy that in their AWS application instance. And um, what Servo does is it collects all the metrics that are going on in the application. The things we mentioned before, all the measurements of the different characteristics, right? The different performance characteristics and whatnot. So it's collecting those and then sending them actually to our back end, which is a machine learning environment. And so that back end is a SaaS application unto itself. The intelligence of our application is never in anybody's space. We're always in our own space. And what we do, and the only thing we take back are the settings. So we're very secure. You know, we never see anybody's data. All we see are the settings of those application parameters. And then we make recommended adjustments to those. And we're doing it, faster than any army of engineers could do it because we're doing it at machine speed.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I'm thinking to myself, as you're talking about one of the cooler stories I've read over the years, I think it was Netflix that unleashed the chaos monkey. Did you hear this story about how they had this agent that would go in and try to break stuff, and then they would have to see if they could fix it and get it rolling? It's somewhat tangential to what you're doing, but the point is it's a way of ensuring reliability, as you suggest, at machine speed, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the chaos monkey is probably used for finding things more like vulnerabilities, right? Mm-hmm. And gaps in the in the performance of the application. What we're trying to do is make sure that the application reaches what's basically called a service level objective, right? You know, the company when the engineers are developing the application, they say, well, it has to do 40,000 operations per second or something like that, right? And so it has a and with X amount of errors and X amount of latency or something like this. And so what we do is we take the application to that level and then we hold it there. And even though the traffic is changing, it's spiking and it's dropping and they're pushing new code, we're holding it at that performance level. And we're doing it by constantly changing the performance parameters that are going on underneath the application. So what I think the chaos monkey was more about is looking for things that could break, they could actually break the application from a code standpoint. Now, we don't touch the code. The code's a black box to us. All we look at are the settings in the app, in the infrastructure itself, the cloud infrastructure, the containers that make up the hold the code that the application is running on. But we don't touch the code. So, I mean, ultimately, crappy codes, probably we can only do so much, right?
Yeah, right.
but actually one thing is we'll show a scenario where somebody's written crappy code because probably has a situation where that crappy code is existing in another place than we are. And what will happen is we'll be able to pinpoint that there's an upstream problem. And so the customer then will be able to say, okay, I need to unblock this other part of the application. And so we can actually help with that by doing the optimization and the part of the app that's important.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And so basically you maintain these service levels and you do it by dynamically adjusting how much compute is necessary, or basically changing the settings is all you're really focused on, right? Is changing the settings to make sure that service levels are being met. And to your point, if there is bad code somewhere, it's going to be pretty obvious. And that's when the client brings in their DevOps teams, right?
Yeah, I think a good analogy to this might be self-driving cars, if you think about autonomy, or you think about automation in driving, your human operator is one level, right? There's very little automation in that. Let's say your speed control, there's some automation in that. You set it at a certain level and it'll change. You know, if you start to slow down some, it'll give the engine more gas. And if you speed up too much, it'll take some of the fuel out until you to try to keep you at a steady state. Now think about adding weather to that, right? And think about adding, route changes necessary because of accidents. Right. And think about adding things like other drivers around you and their behavior. And something that could something that could actually change the driving of that vehicle based on all of those kinds of things would right. need AI to do it. It would need machine learning, right? And you see, you know, you see cars all around. I see them in my you know, where I live in San Francisco. I see cars around all the time that are taking more sensor readings and whatnot. Waymo and other vehicles that are going around and taking different measurements. But that's the only way, is you're going to have to test and test and test and test. Right. And so we do it continually.
Yeah, that's such cool stuff. Maybe we'll bring Michael Krigsman back in from CXO Talk. You know, Michael, you talk to senior executives all the time. I saw a chat you just posted about an interview with David Bray, former CIO of the FCC, about his role being a human flak jacket. That's pretty funny. You do have to be prepared. I mean, one of the funnier quotes I heard from, I guess it was a chief information officer a number of years ago. He was giving advice to people who want to be in that role. He said, get ready to be lonely. That's how he described it. I was like, oh, but what do you think, Michael?
I think loneliness is the privilege of people who want to drive change. It's kind of a sad thing to say, but you don't want to be lonely for all that long, because then you're really going to be alone.
Right.
So the challenge is, how do you protect those people? This is really the issue, right? How do you protect those people who want to drive change? And again, this is why you need multiple layers. You need everybody in the organization, starting with senior leadership, to set the mandate. You know, this is where the organization is going. We are going to change. We are going to rethink, realign our compensation structures. And we want people who will adopt an innovative mindset, who will accept that change. And the folks who are holding on tightly to what has come before, to the exclusion of where we need to go, there's going to be tension there. And in the new, as the company evolves, not everybody's going to make it.
Yeah. No, this is a good point. Maybe I'll bring Gray in for a comment. Got about 2 minutes before the next segment. You know, as a director, you do need to understand who the change agents are and who's keeping the trains running on time. These tend to be different people, and just, you know, to protect both groups, right? Like, you want to make sure the change agent doesn't just piss everybody off, but at the same time, you want to identify when there are people who are kind of holding on to the old way because they fear change, they fear losing their job. You know, one of the cooler stories I heard during the pandemic was a company we've done some work with, and they said, they issued a statement to the whole company. They said, no one is going to be laid off for at least the next 3 months or something. They just wanted to say, look, guys, you're safe for at least 3 months. I thought that was pretty bold and pretty special. And that's, it takes character, it takes management vision. What do you think, Gray?
Yeah, completely. I think that when companies are looking to adopt new innovation, they have to give their existing workforce the security and the training to adopt that change, right? Mm-hmm. Like, too often we bring on new technology or we want to embrace innovation or change, but we're not bringing people along for the ride. I think that often companies miss that mark. So one of the most important things, and I'm sure that folks feel this way, is to make sure that, you know, they can understand why these innovations are happening and how it actually benefits them.
Yeah, that's the key, communication. And it's mission critical, quite frankly. You know, it's communication across the board, but you do have to take some very careful steps and get input from people. I think that's one of the keys, right? I've learned in many years of doing business that when someone's upset, the best thing you can do is let them speak their piece, let them explain what they're upset about, and just try to be calm. Don't take things personally, and just know that there are people who are concerned. There are people concerned they're going to lose their jobs, and they shouldn't be. I think the key is to recognize these are all new tools and technologies that can help us do our jobs better. And the great quote I heard about machine learning is, it's not going to take anyone's job, but the people who use it, we'll probably take the jobs of people who don't use it. But we'll pick that up after the break, folks. You're listening to DM Radio.
Welcome back to DM Radio. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All All right, folks, welcome back to DM Radio, talking all things digital transformation today. We've got Michael Krigsman, CXO Talk, Ray Hardell of Workato, and Patrick Conti of Opsani, I think it is. And Pat, you're making a good point during the break about culture and leadership and what it takes and knowing who to protect and what to protect. But I thought you had a good observation there about the fact that when you get, as a leader, you get people to buy into your program and your vision, well, then you're not going to be quite as lonely. But you do need to focus on that. You do need someone who, again, can kind of see where things are going, have the big picture, understand the big picture. I talked about this in the abstract, and then carve a path to get there. And it's always a journey. It always takes time. It takes steps. But yeah, if you can explain it to people and they understand, okay, this is phase one, phase two, phase three, as we're rolling out this new functionality, then people tend to be pretty open-minded about it. But what do you think, Pat?
Well, I think that's true. And I think it is lonely to be that change agent. It can be, but you do have to get people to buy into the vision, and then you're not so lonely, right? Then they're coming along with you. But it's not always easy to make that happen. So I've been in a number of startup companies, and companies that you know were fast growing companies, and a couple of things that I have noticed that will help you be a change agent in these organizations. And one is always challenging your fundamental assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you founded the company to do one particular thing, which is what you should do. You should found the company to execute on a mission, something that's needed in the marketplace. But you should always challenge that assumption, right? So the leadership is responsible for challenging those assumptions. And if you find that things have changed fundamentally, then you need to have a sort of a ripple effect back through the organization. So yeah, things like, the fundamental problem you were founded to solve, how do you productize that, that assumption and sort of work it all the way back through the organization. The organization changing is the last thing you do. It's not the first thing. The first thing you do is make sure that your assumptions are correct in the business climate that you're in. And if you can get people to see that, and it's not always easy to do, right? Because people get stuck in a role or in their own personal mission, and they get disconnected from the company mission. So you've got to reconnect all those pieces.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Michael Krigsman, I'll throw this over to you, just because you've interviewed so many executives. There are inflection points in company size. We've talked about it on other shows. When it reaches 20 people, it slightly changes. When it reaches 100 people, it changes. When it reaches 1,000 people, it changes. And the rules that succeeded when you were a small company may not foster success when you're a bigger company. So the question becomes, how do you know when and how and why to make significant changes? How do you know when you hit those inflection points when a different management style or a different protocol is required? What do you think about that, Michael?
Boy, that's a tough question. depending on your company size, you have to adapt. At different sizes, companies have different levels of resources. They have different numbers of people. They have different numbers of layers in the organization. Their time horizons for innovation are different. The willingness of customers to accept change in your products and your services is going to be different. For example, in a very large organization, big customers want stability. They want predictability. Right. If you're buying from a startup, on the other hand, you want rapid innovation. That's part of what you're paying for. How do you know when to make the change? Well, I suppose the easy answer is when things are falling apart and not working, then you kind of know.
Right.
But if things are, if your customers are unhappy, if your revenue is breaking down, if your product has all these bugs, and when things break, your employees are leaving, it's easier to treat the symptoms. What's harder is to anticipate, to have that kind of 360 degree awareness, situational awareness, that we're doing fine now, but based on our growth, for example, we're going to reach some type of inflection point. That's much harder to anticipate. But the really good entrepreneurs and the really good business leaders, that's what they're all about, is anticipating those inflection points.
Right. That's a great point. I'll throw it over to Gray Hardell. We have a bunch of really good questions from our virtual studio audience. And again, if you're listening on the radio, you want to get into the action, just hop online to dmradio.biz. You can register and actually take part in these shows being broadcast. And Gray, there are a couple of points about resilience. How do you design resilience? That has a lot to do with automation, right? Of understanding which part of the process can be automated and then making sure that component is as durable as it can be and snappy. That's a term I heard from my buddy Sarbjeet Johal a while ago talking about why Facebook won. And it's because from an ops perspective, they really optimized how swift the application works. When you click on something, it goes. When you type and you enter, it posts. All that kind of stuff. That's operational durability, basically, and efficiency. And anytime you automate one of these processes, you want to make sure it's durable, it's redundant, and it goes really fast. Right, Gray?
Yeah, 100%. You know, if you think about it this way, we live in a world of, you know, immediate gratification, and applications need to work the same way. You know, just the way that, you know, that Pat was talking about how they're continually optimizing. That's right. What applications need to do as well. That's what processes need to do. You know, you can't have a rigid process that doesn't adapt to new technologies. The technologies that you're using today will not be the same technologies that you're using necessarily in 5 years or 10 years. You need to have an infrastructure that is resilient and that is flexible so that you can make those snappy things and you can get that responsiveness that you need. You know, companies are continually trying to see around the corners, and that is really difficult to do, especially in today's day and age. But the nimble companies and the companies that are embracing change are the ones that are succeeding. And I think that's what most people need to start adopting, is this resilience and willingness to change based off current climates.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Pat Conti, I'll bring you back from Opsani. I think I got to correct that time. If not, correct me. But, you know, these SaaS-based applications are so important these days in making sure that they run well. I mean, in a way, you'd think that the big vendors would be focused on that, but they're focused on lots of other stuff, right? So it helps to have an agent come in and help you optimize that. And, you know, one piece of advice I'd give with using all these new technologies that Gray is alluding to is you need to take time to understand the contours of each application, what it does well, what it doesn't do very well, because they're even in the SaaS marketing space, got 8,000 different applications. They're all very different in their strengths and their weaknesses and what they're very good at. And being able to kind of map that out, this gets to the strategy group across your business architecture. And then, of course, you bring like an ops and I to optimize that stuff. But what do you think about making sure that the apps that you're using are doing what you need them to do and finding the rough spots? That's where you automate. What do you think, Pat?
Well, I think it's critically important that the applications that you're building reflect the strategic mission that the company has. Mm-hmm. For example, if you're a grocery chain, you have to make sure your curbside pickup application or your home delivery applications are the best that they can be, right? And not just that the features are the best that they can be, and that they've been written well, but that there's scalability built into them, because you don't know when things are going to spike. You don't know when there's going to be a COVID emergency or an outbreak, and all of a sudden people are going to be, you know, really tied to their homes more than they were before. So you have to make sure that the applications that you're building reflect your mission as a company. But just as importantly as that, you've got to make sure that you build them. You said resilient. I think that's a really good word. Scalable is another facet of resilience, right?
Right.
It means that the application continues to run and run at its, you know, at its service levels that you've chosen for it, even when the traffic is going crazy in one direction or another. And a sudden drop in traffic could also create a situation for an app. So you've got to be able to handle that as well.
Yeah, and there's so much to pay attention to these days. User behavior is crucial. Always listen to what your users tell you. And you'd be surprised what people don't notice sometimes. So just having a culture where people can speak out and explain what's happening, that's huge. Because if you have a sort of domineering culture where people are afraid of the boss, they're not going to speak up and you're going to be missing the intelligence that you need to make changes. So it's really important that people feel confident, they can express themselves, and they can explain what's really happening. Podcast bonus segment is up next. You are listening to DM Radio. Okay, folks, time for the podcast bonus segment here on DM Radio, talking all things digital transformation. And we did want to touch on the security side of things, because obviously security is huge. Some of the best advice I ever got about security is there's an Indian gentleman who said, lunch is not a food. I'm like, huh? His point was that lunch is an event at which you eat any number of food types and drinks and so forth. But lunch per se is not a food. Just like security is not an object or a process. It's a combination of people, processes, technologies, data. All these things have to come together in order to create a robust security profile. And Pat Conte, you spent some time in this space. What are your thoughts about the overlap between security and performance in digital transformation?
I think that, I'm going to give some opinion pieces, and these may not be reflective of my company or other companies that I've been in, but I just will say one thing, and that is, when everything is said and done in security, the only thing that really you have to get right is protecting the data. And the reason why I say that is, bad guys are going to get on your network, because it doesn't matter what you buy. It doesn't matter if you have the latest thing or if your threat, you know, you've tightened up your threat profile, because the bad guys are going to figure out ways to get through all that stuff. And they're going to get on your network. So the most important thing that you can do is, and the thing you have to do, is protect your data. And, you know, since that's half of the name of the show, I think it's appropriate to sort of mention that. And the reason why I say that is, I've been in all different parts of cybersecurity, and people worry about the perimeter. They worry about their network. They worry about their endpoints. And you have to do that, because those are places where bad guys can get in. But the bad guys are going to get in. So when all else fails, you've got to protect the data. And the only proven method of protecting your data is encryption. So you've got to stay up to date in terms of how you're going to do that encryption and manage the keys for that. And especially now, as you're transforming digitally and moving things to the cloud, a lot of companies keep their data resident and move applications to the cloud, trying to keep things in a vault. But over time, they're going to move the data to the cloud as well. So your protection, your encryption and protection in the cloud has to be as good as it would be on your own premise.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Gray, I'll throw this over to you. There's a fun comment from one of our attendees here in the virtual studio audience about legacy applications and do they ever actually go away? And the short answer is almost never, right? One of the funniest quotes I ever heard in this business, Gilbert Van Cutsem was the guy. He was at Actian at the time. And out of the blue, he just makes this comment that cracked me up. He says, "So elephants go to a special place to die, but there is no software graveyard. It all just goes to the cloud." I was like, that's hilarious, because it does, because you wind up, you maybe have intentions of refactoring for the cloud, but instead, oh, let's just lift and shift and put it up in there. And now the work processes have to work around that. Well, every control point from the execution to the data and back is a potential security breach, right? So you always have to be thinking about this stuff. No matter what you're doing, it's always going to be on your mind. What do you think, Gray?
Oh, completely. And I very much so subscribe to the idea that data is never really destroyed. It's always just moved. You know, it's one of those things. It's always just, you know, being shuffled to the next place. But, you know, that's why like data masking and making sure that you have the right encryption is 100% what you need to be able to do. The biggest thing is that folks need to understand is that customers, employees, and partners really entrust the organization to keep that data secure. And the thing that you really don't want to lose is that trust. So, you know, there will always be a new hacker or a new person doing ransomware that can find their way in. But if you've correctly protected, encrypted, and masked the data appropriately, you won't be putting your customers, partners, employees at risk.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a great final comment to throw over to Michael Craigsman of CXO Talk. You know, Gray nailed it. Trust. It's very difficult to build, to foster trust. It's very easy to lose, and then it's almost impossible to get back. This is something that just has to be baked into the mindset and the DNA of every leader out there. What do you think, Michael?
Look, digital transformation means digital, online systems, cloud, and mobile. In our work environment today, which is so distributed and hybrid, people working from anywhere on any kind of advice, any kind of device, the advice, therefore, is trust no one. There's a concept called zero trust security. You can't trust right. anybody. Your devices can be any place. The only problem with that is you have to somehow let your own users in. And there is the challenge. And right. so there's a concept called zero trust security. But I'll tell you, as Gray and Patrick were just saying, if you don't bake security into your systems from the ground up today, go home because you shouldn't be in business.
That's funny. Go big or go home, right? Well, folks, what a fantastic hour today. We talked to Michael Craigsman of CXO Talk, Gray Hardell of Workato, and Patrick Conti of Opsani. All very cool folks. Look them up online. And like I say, send me an email. We're booking the rest of DM Radio for the whole year right now. So send me an email, info@dmradio.biz. We'll talk to you next time, folks. You have been listening to DM Radio.